podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to this week's KLS Rugby Podcast as we reflect on the European quarterfinals and the women's Six Nations. Leinster rolled back the years and rolled on into the last four of Europe. Ulster got trounced under the beaming Claremont sun, as did Connacht in Treviso. But the result of the week was in Cork. We will get to that in just a second, because join me tonight, we have returnees in Leinster fan, the brilliant Keenan Willor, and the man who keeps us up to date on all things rugby on TV, Enda Fahy. Welcome back, fellas.
Thanks for having us, Kyle.
Great to be on.
It's great to have you back on again, lads. But as we said, we're going to start in Musgrave Park, where Ireland, the Ireland women's cruise to a 36-5 victory over Wales, their first Six Nations win in their last eight games. I think it's their third in 15 or something like that, on a day that kind of felt like a true watershed moment. Aoife Waif, player of the match, yet again on his outstanding day for Girls in Green. And I'll start with yourself. Like, unbelievable win, a great day for Ireland, and just a sign that there is progress being made straight away.
Absolutely. Like, it was a five-try bonus point win as well. Like, that's something that this team should be, I think, immensely proud of. So many positives as well to take from the game overall. Like, over 6,000 attendance, another great figure. You know, they've ended, what was it, a two-year streak for a win in the Women's Six Nations. And let's not forget where they were last year and where they finished as well as Wooden Spoon. So I think it was, overall a brilliant day. You already mentioned Aoife Waif, but I thought she was absolutely brilliant, thoroughly deserving of the Player of the Match award. Hugh Griffin, the stats guru, put out some incredible figures that she had, like over 105 metres gained, 84 post-tackle metres, 10 defenders beaten. She got a try, of course. And her interview as well after the game was very interesting. I think she summed it up quite well in terms of where they are, and did say that this result has been coming for a while. And she specifically called out the IRFU, saying that there has been great backing from them as well, which I think is a really positive thing to hear from that camp, especially as we all know where they've been. So in summary, look, it was a great day for women's rugby and hopefully like a sign of things to come, and let's see how they get on in the next round. But yeah, brilliant day, I think, for women's rugby, and hopefully, as you said, one of those, that big moment that will hopefully see them, move on from here and get more good performances in.
Absolutely. And it's not all about the victories. I think we talked about that on this channel when we previewed the Six Nations. It was about the performances against Wales, against Scotland, against Italy. The Italy game, probably disjointed. They probably could have won it if they clicked. This one, a huge convincing win. Questions to be asked of Wales, that's fair enough. And now they go into the Scotland game in Ravenhill on the final weekend. Granted, I have my own reservations about the fact that it's the same day as the women's AIL final and all that, but Keane, like, there's no doubt, like, even just that example, these women have been hamstrung in recent years by the RFU, and that's what makes a result like yesterday feel all the more sweeter, because it almost feels like overcoming the odds to 9, 10, 11 levels, because this is a top five team of the world that they've just hammered.
Yeah, it really is an amazing result, but hamstrung in recent times and still hamstrung to some extent. I mean, you have, just off the top of my head, you've got Scott Beaman has only been in since, June?
His first competition was the WXV3 in November.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a wet minute in rugby. He's literally halfway through his second competition. That's a big lack of stability. Greg McWilliams is only there for a year and a half. And it takes time to adjust to those things. And they seem to be doing that well, which is great. But you really do need structure, especially when you're operating this kind of semi-professional two-layer approach to the game, where, we do have some professional contracts in 15th, which is great. But they're 15 to 30K per person. It's not enough to live in Dublin, but you have to be pretty much living in Dublin to get picked for the team for the most part. There's still a lot of issues to work out around that. And obviously then the biggest one of all was to think of is that letter back in 2021 that these two of the players signed, one of whom being Cliona Maloney, very outspoken, and she was right. And they, a lot of the benefits that have been put in place now by the IRFU came directly from that, but it's taken 3 years for her to be reinstated, to come back into form.
Yeah, come back into form. Yeah, exactly. We
Yeah,
all
asked.
believe that, all right. Yeah.
Yeah. Literally no one believed that, but it was enough of a fig leaf for them to get away with it for 3 years. So it's great to see her back, and maybe hopefully it really is a sign that things are starting to turn around, that they are taking the women's game more seriously, and they are going to put in place further support structures and increase the contracts over time. And hopefully, I mean, that will only lead to more success.
That's what you hope. You hope that the success breeds success in every. And this was the one thing, the one upside that if you have a young squad with, clear leaders, clear, big voices, Sam Monahan, Adele McMahon, Cliona Maloney, obviously back in that squad, you're hoping that they can help bring through other players. And you look at, I did a team of the week kind of just off those two matches because I felt like you can't outweigh Leinster and Ireland's victories, at the same time, but huge results in their own right. Like I'd Enya Breen in there, for instance, alongside Dan O'Brien, because like O'Brien has really struggled at international level with that step up with her type of game, and Breen was fantastic. Eve Higgins was fantastic. Evan Riley, the other side, Aoife Wafer, she's arguably the breakthrough player of the tournament. Even like we're only 3 games in, and it feels like she has that nearly sewn up at this stage, and that's what you want to see. And like Sam Monahan came off after 50 minutes and she had 14 carries made at that stage and five tackles or something, or six tackles. That is a huge amount of work rate in an hour. That's a huge amount of work rate in 80 minutes, never mind in 50 or whatever it was. And like that's what you want to see. And I think Scott Beamon, highly thought of in England, and we're starting to see that, starting to see a team that there's a bit of an identity to how they play, probably defense first, sorting that, then they get onto attack. I think Dennis Fogarty got the set piece so right on the day. I thought set piece was a huge factor. Completely splintered Wales there. And like you see the likes of Niamh Briggs is there as an under-20s coach. She's going to be working through the pathways across the country. It feels like things are going right, even if the most obvious solutions could have been put in place 3 years ago. They finally stumbled into it, and that's a huge factor in it. And listen, will they push on? Will they beat Scotland? I don't know. Scotland are going to be gunning for top three as well. England will probably trounce them because that's what they've done to everyone else. The important thing is just treat the England game as, they do this to everyone else. Doesn't matter what happens in Twickenham, if they hammer us by 60 points, that's what they do to everyone. Let's just try and focus on Scotland and Ravenhill and hopefully can get a result there. And hopefully they do, and hopefully we'll be talking about successes and maybe even Triple Crowns or Championships or WXV2 at the end of the year, or a successful World Cup next year. That's where the target moves to now. I think that's the huge part of it, and could go on and on. So many impressive performances, great crowd, as Enda mentioned. I think it's just a great weekend for women's rugby in Ireland, and hopefully not the, I suppose hopefully not just a starting point. Hopefully it's something that'll be truly built upon, and we can keep moving the goalposts of where it all started, in years to come. But we will have to move on to our European coverage as headlined because, as promised, Saturday's much talked about rematch between Leinster and La Rochelle. It certainly delivered for most of it as the Loughshorns. This time, though, it belonged to the Irishmen. Leinster running out comfortable 40 points to 13 winners. Keane, I am going to give you the floor. Be careful what you say because I can't mute you. How did Leinster go about winning this one and denying La Rochelle the chance to become the first team to go to four European finals in a row?
I'm gonna do the ultimate arsehole move, and I'm gonna quote myself. At 4 o'clock this morning, I wrote on Twitter, "It wasn't down to mentality on the day. It came down to gutter first and rising up. All too familiar at the end of the first half, but Leinster continued to rise. The breakdown battle was the Alpha and Omega, and Nienaber is Hannibal bringing it over the Alps." Actually, it's not bad. A little florid, maybe, but actually, not a bad summary, I thought.
Nothing that you wouldn't expect on TNT or anything like that. Brian O'Driscoll, no one gives Leinster enough praise. Well, Keno has just smashed that out the window. No, go on, Keane.
No, I mean, to be honest, defense first and foremost, it really was. Aggressive line speed and huge work rate. It was pressuring La Rochelle's attack all day, disrupting their ability to execute plays and forcing errors, plenty of errors, in handling. strong tackling, high physicality, really physical in those tackles as well. So often La Rochelle stopped on the gain line or pushed back. I actually didn't look at the dominant tackle figures, but I'd say there was a good number in there in Leinster's favour, frankly.
Absolutely.
The field positioning, the covering in the backfield and the defensive line, was great. We didn't get bunched up. There was some access to the edge, but the scramble in behind actually worked really well in those. So, there's a fair number of the missed tackle, but I don't think really much came of those for the most part. Then the other kind of major cornerstone was the ruck. In terms of attacking, rucks absolutely cleared out so effectively, fast and clean ball for the backs, which just continued to allow Leinster to maintain that pressure.
I might just jump in there for 2 seconds, Keane, because I don't know what your perception on Leinster's ruck work has been, but I thought they'd taken a huge risk not going Van der Vlier. Like, he is uber effective at ruck time. Connors is a good tackler, fair enough. But when you're already without James Ryan and you're taking out Van der Vlier, it seemed like a risk. But it kind of worked. And it wasn't necessarily all efficiency. It was just right man, right time, do the job, on to the next thing. But it wasn't as careless as we've seen before from Leinster, which I feel like that was what you noticed, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. The ruck focus has changed considerably since that final last year. I mean, in fairness, they had started to focus more on a kind of ruck physicality last year, but it's gone up another level with Nienaber having come in, and that kind of barge and making a shit show out of every ruck really did, especially like some of those defensive rucks were absolutely nuts. And yes, they weren't always legal, but that's a ruck. Literally every single ruck is like that. So either you get called on it or you don't. The stupidity is keeping on doing it if you've been called on it. So it's just trying to keep the right side of the referee, find that line. And certainly both sides were at it. But then the other aspect of the ruck was the ability to win those crucial penalties at the ruck at the right time in the right positions on the pitch. And it allowed Leinster to be able to not only exit their own half, which they couldn't do for love nor money in the final last year, but to get into attacking positions and keep the ball in La Rochelle's half for sustained periods of time. And that was something I noticed in the first half, is like absolutely able to get out of the half, and that was going to be one of the key things in trying to get it to work all the way out. Other than that, set piece went well. The line out was decent. Jenkins was did exactly what was required of him. I'd say literally he was just told, just fucking push. That was his job for the day, and he did it. Catch the ball and push things forward. And that was about it. And yeah, he did really well. He was really secure, fairly secure on the line out. First one went astray, but other than that, I think we were actually pretty good. Ended up with a better percentage than La Rochelle did. So again, actually in line of defense, we didn't do too badly either. We made a mess of some of their moves. Maldy was good for the most part. Not throughout the whole thing, but it's La Rochelle. They're no slouches. You're not going to keep them at bay for the whole game, in any aspect of the game. The carrying as well, and the handling. The footwork was good. The handling was insane at times. It
Probably the
was
best we've
absolute top
seen,
drawer.
arguably all season, I think, could you say?
This was, arguably the best performance I've seen from Leinster across pretty much every aspect of the game in all season, except maybe the line out. The scrum was excellent. We did get some good change there, and the bench, the 6-2 worked beautifully for us. It worked absolutely like it should. In the backs, you had Ross Byrne pulling out his best performance in the blue ever. It was proper big boy grown up fly half stuff. He's not really stamped his brand on, this is supposed to be his team now that Johnny Sexton's retired. He hadn't really nailed his colours to the mast, but I think he did yesterday. It was really, really mature performance. He did hit the woodwork a couple of times. He really seemed to hate that left post. But other than that, like, you couldn't fault it. He was taking things like, his hands were good, his timing was good, he was putting people away, exactly what you'd expect him to do in his role in the team. And obviously also we saw how badly a 6-2 can backfire on you with La Rochelle's unfortunate injuries.
It always seems to be injuries as well. Like, that's the one thing
It
people
is.
do talk about 6-2. It's very rarely a tactical mistake. It is really injuries just catching up to you. And, like, we wish our best to Eric Barlow.
Oh,
Like,
of course,
once you
yeah.
see James Lowe kind of walking across to see how he was, you knew it wasn't great. You know, former Chiefs teammates, and, like, you wish him the best. And then Dylan Lay is just a nasty, like, just one of those where 99 times out of 100, you're fine in that collision. And this is the one time where you just kind of end up a bit twisted and wrong-sided. And I did feel like Rhys Doolan being ruled out of the game was huge, because Leeds is a fine player, but, you know, he's not Rhys Doolan. Then Hugo Keenan gets ruled out, but once Leeds gets injured,
Yeah.
it felt like that's it. The pendulum was swung right back in Leinster's favour in that regard again.
Absolutely. I mean, a really you had then a really effective kicking game, making hay of that backfield, that makeshift backfield. You had Jordan Larmour actually quite good on the counter as well. Crawley had a great day at fullback. And he does offer, like, he's no Keenan, but he does offer something different in this kind of a second playmaker type role in bringing it to the line. That he does have a slightly broader skill set in that sense, and it does offer something different and it changes the picture. Which in a game of tight margins, that can be a really important thing. I thought Robbie Henshaw and Jamie Osborne actually gelled really well again
I thought
in
Henshaw was
midfield.
fantastic, to be
Oh.
honest. I'd like you have to you kind of have to balance it off. Yes, Osborne was very, very good, but at the same time, Henshaw is the elder statesman who has to make sure that, and that's it's actually a role that Robbie thrives in. He loves being that 13, who's kind of the defensive leader, and I actually think it suits him more than being at 12 and being the kind of just sit down and do your job. I'm not that Gary Ringrose was going to tell him to sit down and do his job or anything like that, but, you know, it does suit him. And you mentioned Larmour, I thought James Lowe, apart from that one NFL cornerback style intervention from James Lowe, I thought he did really, really well. Fraught, like, it was just a defensive performance. And that's actually what I had noted here, because I said it on Twitter as well, was I didn't feel like Leinster won that game. The breakdown was important. I didn't feel like it won of them. I felt like it was defense. The Nenagh defense, when it gets going, and I think we can start saying it as well, the Felix Jones defense, because he did it in England. When it gets going, it's possible. I actually think maybe this is too far, because I do love the South African national team, everything. I think the Nenagh defence might be even an improvement on the Edwards defence, what the Edwards defence ever was, because you got better backs, you got better tens, you got better fullbacks than ever before. And you look at how they laid down the groundwork. Like, even you go back to the World Cup final, for instance, when, like, South Africa kicked the ball multiple times in the last 10 minutes because they trust themselves. Leinster, I think, are going to move into that. And I actually think this is why this year feels like a bonus for Leinster, because to get to a quarterfinal against La Rochelle and to be able to trust your defence, it's probably, yes, it was bang on 15 weeks. I understand that. But it's probably slightly ahead of schedule as well. Like, 15 weeks is the target. It's not the set in stone longest, because it's a blitz defence. It's hard to learn, do you know? And,
It
like,
is.
big plaudits to them on for the effort, but for the accuracy on D. And I thought Henshaw, Lowe, Larmour, to his credit, probably beat in. I don't think Larmour goes for as many of those reads if it's anyone other than Teddy Thomas, because he's probably one of the few wingers he probably has a size advantage on. But at the same time, still had to make them. They made them very well. And then come the second half, they didn't have much defending to do, because La Rochelle looks so disjointed. And it's probably something we get on about with Ulster a bit later on in Connacht. But it just, that first half of the first, it was like the Bulls game in some regards. That kind of 40 to 50 minutes, that was it, game over then. And that's what they do really, really well. And I want to move
Actually,
off, because we've a good few games to get on to. I might just come back to you in a second, Kino. And a lot is going to be said now. Like, it's Northampton in Croke Park. There's potentially Toulouse in the final that you would assume to lose. Do you think what we've seen from Leinster can say that they can go all the way? And do you think they will go all the way from here?
yeah, I think they can. I really think they will. And you've mentioned Nina Barron. Like, I think that's been the masterstroke by Leinster in the offseason last year to get him in now. As you mentioned, the defense was so good, and I'm glad you brought up the Rucks. Like, and there's been a lot of chat about this as well. Like, Leinster, and this has been a Leinster trait throughout the season. They're just causing havoc at ruck time, and I just love watching it. They're just so, you can tell that they're just so frustrated to play against because there's so much niggle, there's so much grab. Like, we've all seen that clip of Connors getting shoved into the ground by Bhatia because he was, just being there and just, living on that line as well, but just causing havoc. And I love that. And like, you can just tell that these players have really bought into it and they really wanted it. And again, like, this is, I think, the third time now that Leinster have kept a team like scoreless in the second half. Like, it's been like, that's their foundation. Like, absolutely. I think that's what will get them through. Now, we know Northampton, look, they were a really good attacking side the last couple of seasons, and now they've really worked on defense. So I think Leinster will have a lot to deal with when it comes up to them. And I think, Northampton will put in a good performance, but I just think this has to be Leinster season. Look, I was lucky enough to be at the game, and this is my first game since Ireland beat South Africa in the World Cup. So it was like, there was a lot of hype for me, but I certainly thought the occasion lived up to it. The crowd really got behind them. Whenever there was a penalty given, even at ruck time, and Leinster won a turnover, like, the crowd reacted like it was a try. I really liked that. Like, it's as if the crowd knew how important the game was. And again, like, this is not Leinster's first time beating La Rochelle this season. They went down there in absolutely atrocious conditions, and again selected Will Connors at number seven, and came away with a really good win. And I think those are the types of wins, like yesterday, plus that win away from home in La Rochelle. Like, nobody wins in La Rochelle's home ground. Now, I look, they haven't had a perfect start to the season. I think they've, like, before Saturday's game, they had 12 losses so far this season. So then they're not where they were at, but I still think
Yeah,
for
something. I
Leinster to
think it
go
was
down
like
there.
12, 1-12, lost 12, or 1-13, lost 12, or something this season. It's not been perfect, but at the same time, Leinster haven't been perfect either. There's that caveat as well, isn't there?
So I think, yeah, look, they did it in such emphatic style, I think, yesterday as well. And Rodge was very humble after the game, and he said, like, that Leinster completely deserved it. I think we all know they did. I've mentioned Connors. I love that decision as well. Like, he doesn't start many European games at all. I think this could be maybe his third. I thought that was brilliant. Just, I love that gamble, like, of just selecting him, and it worked. It paid off. He chopped low, and he caused havoc at the breakdown. I just love that from them. Keogh's mentioned a good few players. I think he could mention probably all 1 to 15. But I thought Joe McCarthy again was so good. Again, he just seems like, I think a lot of people were saying for a few seasons that maybe Leinster needed that kind of enforcer, that guy who's just a pain in the ass. And I just think Joe McCarthy gives you that as well, especially with the loss of Ryan, because I think Ryan's really developed into that player who just loves the physicality, gets in players' face. And I think Joe McCarthy is stepping up to that plate as well. Gibson Park, obviously, but yeah, special mention as well to Kieran Frawley. We've mentioned him, but I think, like, getting thrown in like that close to kickoff as well. What a performance. I think he has to deal with a lot of bullshit in the media personally. And I just, same with Ross Barron as well. Like, I just think there are just sections within the media and on Twitter who just think that these players maybe don't have what it takes, or, like, well, in Kieran Frawley's face, that he should leave Leinster to get proper game time, but whatever. I think he's backed himself. He was on the bench for the game, and then was thrown in at the start and showed what he can actually do. And Ross Byrne as well, I think he just reminded us of what he is capable of. He's still a young lad, and it was just great to see him get man of the match. But overall, yeah, a great performance, great occasion, all without Sexton. So I really think this is the year they could do it, and I really hope they can. Like, even though I'm a Connacht fan, I hope they can get A2000 in Croker. I think it'd be something special.
I don't think I want that. I'll have too many flashbacks. It'll hurt me too much if I see 80,000 people in Croke Park for anything at this. Like, I'm a Galway man who supports Munster. If there's a full house in Croke Park, I'm losing. Like, it's not ideal for me. But no, I'm like, going to Croke Park is gonna be cool. And like, it's kind of, I don't want to be disrespectful to Northampton either, but it does feel like Leinster will roll into that game and they will just have like Northampton's, what's Northampton's, what's their main focus point? Is their attack. They're a lethal, lethal attack. If it's not that, It's their three lock pack. That's what Leinster have. And they've got a good defence and they've got a three lock pack. Is there anything for Leinster to be really scared of apart from Mr. Complacency? I don't think there is. And now at the time of record, we don't know what sort of squad they're sending out to South Africa, but you would assume they're probably going to go even weaker than if they had lost, obviously if they had lost this game, but probably go a bit weaker and just target that Lions game, take the L at the Stormers, hope to get 5 or 6 points, and I think that will probably be the aim. We have a lot to get to tonight, two more Challenge Cup games to get to, but really quickly, the Champions Cup quarterfinals, how is that have unfolded? For the first time ever, we had four victors scoring over 40 points in the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup. Douay Rugby is well and truly back. Unfortunately, though, Douay Rugby died a tiny bit when Bordeaux lost because they were the penultimate of it. But if there's one team that is more unserious than Bordeaux, it is Quins. 42-41 in the Stade Chaban Delmas, an absolute belter. If you didn't see it, just end to end. Marcus Smith stood up. He was the player the TNT have said he's been for years. You know, Maxi Moussu was absolutely unstoppable for 80 minutes. And then he missed the conversion almost straight in front of the post. Bordeaux defeated. The juggernaut kind of hits a snag in the road. And that's a rough one, but well deserved for Quins at the same time. As we said, Leinster 40, La Rochelle 13. La Rochelle will not three-peat, so Toulon's record will remain intact for the time being. Northampton 59, Vodacom Bulls 22. It was a weakened Bulls team. It was a full-strength Northampton team in the Franklin's Gardens, and no real surprises there. And then today on Sunday, Chalus 64, Exeter 26. They were 19 points to 17 down at one stage, I think it was, in that second half, and they won 64 26. If there's one thing about Chalus, their ability to turn it on. I won't finish that joke, but the semi-final ties then at the same time is the fourth weekend of the 4th of May. As we said, Croke Park the host as Leinster take on Northampton. That is Saturday the 4th of May at 5:30. That'll be live on RT2 as well as TNT. And then on Sunday the 5th at 3 p.m. Toulouse take on Harlequins in Stadium Toulouse. Now, this is probably the elephant in the room as well. Leinster going to Croke Park is further than Toulouse going to Stadium Toulouse, but only one of them is going to get talked about because I don't know. It's rubbish. If you want to send Leinster to Portlaoise for European semi-final, fair enough. But Stephen Jones can find his own way back to Dublin then at that stage, and he can write about that and the trains and everything. But listen, that's just my rant because it annoys me as well as it annoys everyone else. Lads, is there any of those games you want to talk on really quickly? And you could argue all three of them, or all three of the other games. Well, is there anything you want to jump in with before we move on to the Challenge Cup? Okay,
I don't
no.
know. I don't know if I want to move on to Connacht, but yeah, we can.
Keane, save the man, will you? You're the
Oh
one riding
God.
high.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible result for Quins. I mean, it's a massive upset, but and like Bordeaux would have been kind of, they were one of the favorites. They were certainly in the running.
They are my second favourites heading into this weekend, to be honest.
And like they've quality throughout. Yeah, Marcus Smith, like he is a fine player. Kind of, they haven't figured out how to make him work in the England system yet. But when they do, or you know, well, I suppose if they do, if and when, then like the sky's the limit. He's an amazing player. Then Bulls, to be honest, I'm sad that they lost. Obviously,
We're all URC enthusiasts
are we
here.
gonna
You're
go
all
there?
friends.
And I'm sad that they lost. I'm also sad about the narrative around the team that they sent, because I can understand why they sent us a weakened team. Like, it's not written in stone anywhere that you have to prioritize Europe over your domestic league. It isn't.
That's the issue though, isn't it, Keane? Because like in years gone by, back when it was the Heineken Cup, you had a much smaller playing squad for Europe. Now it's essentially register as many players as you like. Most squads don't because then you kind of have to like ring them and if you register a player, they'll expect there's all that. But like you reap what you sow. Like fuck around, find out is kind of an element. That's what the EPCR have done here. They can't really complain, can
Yet again,
they?
it's kind of what they do.
As I said, they're like a good politician. They promise everything and they don't deliver on anything at this stage. But I
Was it
completely
what?
agree with you. And
Four
like,
main sponsors? Four main sponsors, wasn't it?
yeah, four main sponsors and finals all around Europe. And the furthest we went to was Bilbao. Now, it was a great day for you, Keane, but for the rest of us, we don't really remember any final that's been outside UK or France, apart from last year, which wasn't a good day for you. But
And
we'll move on.
now it's going to be in London on the same day as the FA Cup final in Wembley
Yeah,
Stadium.
exactly. And there's going to be people going to that who are like, oh, well, we might even have time to run across to the FA Cup state final stadium, because if Quins or whoever get to it, they might even go. They'll go to the Challenge Cup final and root on Bennett or whoever it is that gets there. We'll move on to that because we've two more games to get to. Granted, the vibe is going to take a bit of a turn here, guys. I know it's a Sunday evening. I'm sorry, but on Sunday it was an all URC Challenge Cup quarterfinal yet again. Actually, same as last year, as Benetton, formidable at home, took on Connacht, and it was not to be for Pee Wilkinson's Ben. They fell 39-24 to the Italian juggernaut, and even at that, probably a little bit flattering to Connacht in the end, which is the hardest part of it. And you're the resident Connacht guest that we have here tonight, and it's another disappointing European exit on Italian soil, but I think the worst part is it was probably worse than last year's loss. It feels like almost a small regression of sorts.
It really does, and for me as a Connacht fan, like, and it was epitomizing this game. They're just like an incredibly frustrating team to watch. Like arguably, I think they put in one of their performances of the season against Pau last week. You know, away from home, huge result, brilliant for the team. You think they're really maybe turning a corner, and then they go in and put in this performance. Like, it was a look like there were great conditions, but I just thought, you know, there were just so many errors that I just. It's so frustrating to watch, like not thinking of high balls, missed tackles, handling errors, the lot, not protecting the ball at rough time. They concede so many turnovers. Just really frustrating to watch. Like, and just the consistency, it's a boring narrative, but it's so true, unfortunately, about Cog. This has been their season. Like, they started off quite well. They've been up and down. They've got some players back. But I think, like, overall, like, it, yes, compared to last year, definitely a worse performance. They're consistent. Like, there are a lot of negative things we could say, but I think, like, it is Pete Wilton's first year in proper, like, properly in charge. You've got Scott Faherty there, you've got John Muldoon. Like, I think we briefly mentioned before we kicked off, like, we need to give these guys time. Now it's difficult in this environment to give coaches time to settle in, but I do think Connacht are still going in the right direction. I still think they're playing a nice style of play. I think they've confirmed a lot of really good young and upcoming players for ahead of next season. So I think they're definitely going in the right direction. They just need to cut out this type of inconsistency. But I think that will come, and I think the players are probably just getting used to everything. So that's what I want to hope it is anyway. But I
Can I
just
just
think
throw a
that
devil's
they're going in the
advocate
right
question
direction.
at you there, Enda,
You
if you don't
can.
mind? Because people, I've had this discussion with people in recent days and weeks. Pete Wilkins is not new to the building, and probably the big issue now, not every Connacht fan I speak to, some that I speak to, a lot of their issue is there's no consistency in selection, which, you know, you're losing cohesion. Does that annoy you? Because, like, he has been there, he knows these players. He probably has at least more than a vague idea of what kind of system he wants to play, because it's the month of April now. Do you feel like that's coming back to bite them small? Because again, like, four changes this week, but that's like 20 changes in their last three games, like.
Yeah, and like you're definitely hitting the nail on the head, like, because th there have been, like, throughout the season, like, there have been so many changes. You're right, week on week, and that is frustrating. Like, Niall Murray for ages wasn't getting picked at the beginning of this season for whatever reason. Now his brother has been doing a pretty good job, Dara, but I just think that was a baffling decision for me, particularly as he's so good in the lineup and so good at stealing ball. Yeah, look, that is frustrating, and he's not new to the building. Like, but I guess it's his first year properly in charge, but I don't know where he's going in terms of that selection piece. I don't know why there is consistency, because, like, we all know, if you look at the stats, especially if when players are playing together more often, they put in, you know, teams put in better performances. You get used to playing to the guy next year. We all know it's that's, you know, that's why they do that. So, like, unless he's just using this season to figure out, you know, what kind of squad he wants next year, you know, who can play his style of play the best. I'm not really sure. Like, it's, or is this, is he trying to be ruthless? Is he trying to set a standard where if he thinks you aren't good enough one week, you're not going to get in the next? Like, it's strange. Like, there's some players who've just barely featured as well. Like Tom Farrell, like, I know he's been out injured for a while, but I think he's an excellent player. I thought he'd get a lot more game time this year. But I just don't want to be too overly negative. And also one thing I want to mention as well is, and I think a lot of URC fans will appreciate this as well, that in this game, like if we just focus on today's game, Benetton were brilliant. Another huge crowd. They were second in the URC table this season for a good chunk of time. You look at their squad, I think they've got some absolute superstars. They've got some great players coming in next season. It's
Yeah,
a
it's only
really
going to get
feel good
deeper,
story.
like.
It really is, yeah. And they have that financial backing as well, which is just it's exciting to see. I on my own podcast, we had an Italian bunch of Italian guys on before. They were great guests, and they were saying that there are plans to develop the stadium even further out in Treviso. They're going to put in another stand behind one of the posts. So look, Benetton really seem to be going in the right direction. I think that's from a holistic point of view, I think that's great to see. It still sucks being a Connacht fan talking about those positive things, but I think of anyone to lose to, it's probably Benetton potentially that you want to lose to because they're that, and again, you look at their Rainbow Cup success a couple of seasons ago. Like it just, I would love for them to go all the way now. And whether or not they have the ability of doing that, I'm not so sure. But I just wanted to give a shout out to Benetton as well. But yeah, kind of the whole season been inconsistent, frustrating to watch. And I just think overall that they are capable of good things. I genuinely believe that they do have really good players coming through and in the squad. But yeah, we'll see. I just think, yeah, just let's just take a breath for a minute and just see how they get on next season. See how the recruitment goes in the off season. Again, as I mentioned, they've secured a lot of signatures for next season. So let's see how they do then.
Understandable disappointment. And like, I had to record this time last week after Munster lost, and it was on the Sunday as well, and Munster played on the Sunday. I know what it's like, it's not easy. And to be fair, to give that bit of perspective about Benetton is important as well, because a team on the up, and it's fantastic to see. Like, even like I've no problem with foreign head coaches, but to see an Italian coach bringing them on this rise is brilliant, because we haven't really seen that in years gone by. And there's so much like about them. Their style of rugby is just beautiful. Like, there's no other word for it. Like, they've got big monstrous pack who can just hit you any way you like. The likes of the Canones, who maybe like the Murray brothers, maybe one is playing 40 minutes, the other plays 40 minutes, and no one actually notices because they look the same. I don't know, but like they just have a bit of everything. Lovely brand of rugby. And like, I don't think Benetton will make the top eight this year because they've got a really tricky last couple of fixtures in the URC. But they bloody deserve it if they do, because it has not been easy. They're formidable at home. Like, that's 3 wins on the bounce, or 4 out of the last 5 at home to Connacht, I believe, actually, like, which is really, really good. And yeah, it's great to see for them, like, to make a European semi-final, and you wouldn't write them off going into next week. Keane, we do have to focus on Connacht as well, because ultimately when we looked at this draw last week, myself, Adam, and David were on, and we did say the path was opening up for Connacht and for Ulster. Where do you think it went wrong for you on today, even? No, I was going to say yesterday.
Yeah, it was that yellow card, wasn't it, really? It just, like, it was so promising right before that, the try going up 7, great start, and then the yellow, unfortunately. And Benetton just kicked it up a notch after that, and like 4 tries before half time kind of did everything. Like, there was 2 things that stopped Connacht winning this game. This is going to sound trite. 2 things that stopped Connacht winning this game, and those 2 things were true: Benetton and Connacht. And it's unfortunate, but it's true. They really seemed to do everything they could to get in their own way. All those handling errors under pressure, the line out, that line out just outside, just on the try line, that on the 5 meter line, that was absolute killer.
The overthrow, was it?
Yeah, the overthrow, and it was a massive overthrow. It could have cleared nearly the other side of the
You
park.
try playing a hooker,
I have. There's a reason I don't play for a professional team of hooker. I was terrible at it. I know what terrible hooking looks like. That was it.
As you were.
Yeah, and they just they I think they were also, sorry, defeated by one other thing, which is natural sunlight. That sun was beating down on them. They looked drained by the end of the game, to be honest, as well. It was pretty hot over there, and It's been really shitty over here, so it's a difficult jump to go over to that kind of weather, and play 80 really high tempo, lots of ball and play time rugby. So it was a tough ask. Frankly, Benetton have become a really capable team. Like, and when they get going, they're ballers. It may have been different, had some of the longer term injuries been available for Connacht in Santiago Cordero. And
Mac Hansen.
yeah, Mac Hansen, sorry, yeah. But look, it's unfortunately it's just gone by the wayside now, and just have to focus on the URC and make that eight and make it into Champions Cup next year, and maybe take a scalp or two in the URC just to remind everyone that Connacht aren't going anywhere just yet.
And the thing is, like, they've got two fairly nice fixtures next up in Zebra and the Dragons. You'd back them to get 9, 10 points there, but then Munster and Thomond Park, Munster are going to be chasing not just top 8 but top 4. They'll have Stormers at home who are going to be chasing top 4 as well, and they'll have Leinster, who, if you're going to take off your kind of Irish hat, you'll be saying they're not going to be guaranteed top spot going into the last few rounds. Not when you have, like, they go to South Africa, Glasgow go to South Africa, but they have two Interpros and Glasgow have two games against Zebra. You know, you have to imagine that's going to go right down to the wire, and it's not easy for Connacht, but there is an element of, you know, where do you stop the pats at the back, because they lost this game by 15 points, and you know the URC run-in is made difficult because they got hockey by the Lions and things like that. So the balance is important probably in this conversation, no more than, well, I was going to say Leinster, but I feel like Leinster got their dues in fairness, but Ulster, probably a bit of balance is needed as well, because they ultimately bombed out of the competition as well. It was in the Stade Marcel Michelin. Oh, what a stadium. Like, just what a, like, it just brings it back. I think the out half for Clermont went for a drop goal at one stage, and it just brought us all back to when Brock James would just try and kick a drop goal every time he played an Irish team. And it was just beautifully nostalgic. But that's probably as far as our highlights are going to go, because ultimately Clermont, you know, in the second half, absolutely Mullered Ulster 53-14 at the end. Absolute rampage, and like one side of second half, but there was an element of that kind of, when Clermont went to power, Ulster were looking to get fatigued. Well, not looking to be, but you know, they'd Henderson gone off, Herring had gone off, Kitsoff obviously went off early as a prop, O'Toole had come off. It was really starting to show, and Ulster were sloppy, they were stodgy. I do have questions about their attack off Nathan Doak. I think Nathan Doak's doing all right at 10, but I think there's a sustainability factor when I see it. They're just trying to get the ball as far away from him as possible. Get into the hands of Balakoon, Hume, Lowry, whoever. But when you go up against a Clermont pack who are absolutely massive, it will take a toll. And that's what kind of happened. And Keane, I might just start with yourself. I'm the only one who's seen this, so we'll kind of move quickly through it. Like, a real blow to Ulster, because they would have fancied their chances just like Connacht, but to lose in that manner is very deflating, especially after performances were on the up. You know, they hammered the Dragons, didn't play that well. They lost the Sharks, didn't play that well. Played really well against the Stormers in defeat. Played really well last week in victory, but then right back down to earth, and then some this week.
The feel good factor, I think, has been put on the ground now by this one, unfortunately. Richie
Bye
Murphy,
bye bye, new manager bounce, isn't that it?
well, look, it can only last so long. This wasn't particularly long, unfortunately. Like it is, it's like it's a setback. I'd say they probably readjusted their targets for the season when Richie came in. And I think any sensible coach, even coming in on a temporary basis, is going to have a look at that and go, look, we need to see where we are realistically with stuff. And even if they chalk that up as maybe a loss, because it's not an easy place to go. It never has been. That they were so close in the Challenge Cup, well, in the Heineken Cup so many times, and always the bridesmaid, but never a bad team. So, despite all that, even if they had a loss chalked down, I don't think they would have had the form of that loss down as a name like that. It's It's very disappointing. It really is. And on top of all the management changes and the economic woe and the contracts and all of that, the little bit of happy news that Ulster fans had for a little time, it's like, yeah, no, you've just been kind of handed your arses in a French stadium. Looking forward, they're just going to have to shift onto the URC as well, really. I mean, the five games left, two derbies, and they need to keep their heads above water for the playoff places and try to get it back into Europe again next year. They need to regroup and address the deficiencies that came out of that game, try to end their season on a high note. And that's going to be as important, if not more important, for Richie Murphy than anyone else if he does want to take a tilt at taking that job full time.
If he wants it, I suppose.
Yeah.
There's
Yeah.
that element as well. Does he want it? I feel like I was on the Red Hand podcast during the week with Peter and with Brett Igoe, and I did feel like probably the right man to get the job. When you look at the kind of the age profile of some of Ulster's players, Tom O'Toole moving to Loosehead, Tom Stewart, Scott Wilson, Harry Sheridan, Dave McCann, so on and so forth. You know where I'm going with this. He probably is the right man, but there is performances like this where I think a big issue for Ulster, personally, I feel like there is a bit of a leadership gap. When Ian Henderson is not there for Ulster, it looks different. And don't get me wrong, I love Stuart McCluskey. I think Stuart McCluskey is a fine player, a fine leader, fine man to have a cut off Stephen Ferris on Twitter, deservedly so. But he's not that kind of leader. He leads by doing. And Ulster needed a Henderson, they needed a Herring. Those lads were gone off by, I think, like the 45th minute or something like that. And that took a toll. And we'll round things off now with yourself. Never going to this game, and we did mention the coaching there, but it's just, I think the worst part for Ulster has just been a bad European campaign because, they've been hockeyed three, four times now.
Yeah, they have. And the saddest thing is about probably yesterday's game was that I don't think any of us are surprised that they lost. I'm certainly not. Like I know they've had a bit of a bump since Richie's come in, and they have put in some good performances. But when you look at when you take a holistic viewpoint of where that like what they've gone through in the last couple of months, this can't be surprising. We won't get into all all the chaos that has been going on behind the scenes and everything, but I just think they need to finish the season strongly. Obviously, they need to build for next season, but I just like that result for me just was not surprising. When you consider everything, and they just really need to focus on the ORC now, get some decent results, and just settle things and just get ready for next season. It has a great off season, and just I don't know. I hope
Top four is
from an
still
Irish
there for
rugby
them,
perspective
though.
that the
Do you
It is
know?
indeed, and I think I don't know if they have the players and everything to get there and have like Richie's come in now and he's trying to put his he's make his impact on the team. Is he trying to change things up? He probably is. It does he have enough time to implement those changes? I'm not sure. Or would he just stick to what the players know? Like I could be wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully they do make it. It'd be great from an Irish rugby perspective. But I just think with everything going on, that they mightn't, but look, they've something to focus on now. They got to like I still think they did pretty well to get where they did, like to get to the quarterfinals. When you consider everything they've been through, that's an achievement, I think, in itself. As Kino mentioned, they probably set certain targets that were quite limited, but I think that was pretty impressive. It was clear, but they haven't had a great top 14 season so far, but it is still a formidable place to go. So fair play to them. But yeah, I just hope that all the necessary changes behind the scenes have hopefully been implemented, and now we can really start to see Ulster build again and get some more players in that Irish squad and start to bring through more talent.
Absolutely. If you want to hear more on Ulster, we did a podcast myself, Adam Latham and Jack Fogarty, back the time Dan McFarlane resigned back in February. If you want to check that out, it's only about half an hour long, just to kind of get to run over it. Likewise, we talked about women's rugby earlier. We've done a couple of pods on them from back in March as well. If you want to go back, there's a catalogue there for all these things, but just so many games to get through this weekend. We couldn't get on to everything, but feel like you've surmised it very well. Sorry to leave the worst to last, but just the way that it was. Final bit of housekeeping with the Challenge Cup quarterfinal results: Gloucester 23, Ospreys 13, in a tepid enough game in King's Home, to be honest. But Gloucester roll on; they have a chance to claim a treble. Remarkably, still in the hunt for that because of the Prem Cup and the Challenge Cup and so on. The Hollywoodbet Sharks beat Edinburgh 36-30 down in Durban to book themselves a first South African team to make a semi-final in the European competition, which is great to see as well. Obviously, with that result then of Claremont 53, Ulster 14, and today Benetton 39, Connacht 24. That means the semi-finals are as follows. All both on Saturday, the 4th of May, 12:30 in the Twickenham Stoop is Hollywoodbet Sharks against Claremont Auvergne. Good chance to send the URC to the masses of London. And on at 3 p.m., Gloucester against Benetton in King's Home. You could look at two home wins there. And if you do, Sharks Gloucester wouldn't be a bad final. Sharks Benetton would be a cracking final, I feel like, in London. I'm sure plenty of listeners here would have got the match pass, the two match packs, and we'd be heading off to it. But lads, we will leave it at that. It has been brilliant to look over a mixed weekend, but I think on the whole, a pretty big weekend when you consider the seismic nature of the Ireland women's result as well. So to Enda and to Keane, thank you so much for joining us. You can catch Enda on the Pirate Rugby podcast, Keane everywhere, but in particular the Harping on Rugby podcast. If you want to catch them, lads, it's been a pleasure to have you on. Thanks home to everyone for listening. We will be back with the semi-final action, but you can catch me in the meantime on the Red Army podcast as Munster travel to Pretoria this week. So we'll be looking ahead to that one. Gets a much stronger Bulls team, and I'm absolutely delighted. And you can sense the sarcasm. But as always, Enda, Keane, and to everyone at home for listening, thank you so much. Until next time, take it easy.
Sports Social Podcast Network.